What's up, you guys? I'm Haley.
And I'm Andrea.
And this is Inhuman, a true crime podcast.
Haley's back.
Woohoo, I'm back. If you missed last episode, Andrea did a solo episode because I came down with the, I guess we can just say it. I feel
we
like
can
on
say
social
it, yeah.
media, you don't want to say it, but this is a podcast. I came down with COVID. No clue how I got it. I was visiting my sister's college town for her college graduation, and I kind of thought I got it there, but I came down with it like 2 days after the first day I was there. So I don't really know, or maybe 3 days. So maybe it could have been, I have no clue. Thankfully, I am vaccinated. It was a pretty mild case. And my worst symptoms were just like achy, congested throat. Like it wasn't that bad for me, thankfully. And I am not fully recovered yet, but doing a lot better. So thank you everybody who in like our Facebook group and on Instagram sent me messages and said, you know, I hope you get better well soon. I really appreciate that. And definitely helped me get better quicker.
Yeah, we have the best listeners. So thank you guys for doing that. So sweet.
And shout out to Andrea for covering that episode. I was like, maybe I can do it. And then I was like, no, my voice is non-existent. And that was, I hadn't heard that case. So I listened to it after it came out. I was like, oh my God, I wish I could have been recording it because it was so good.
But I think at one point I like reacted to my own like part of the story. Yeah. And I was like, well, somebody's got to do it.
Yeah, no, it was perfect. You did an awesome job. So Thanks. Thank you for that. But I am back. Hopefully my voice sounds okay. And with that, we'll just get into today's episode.
Sounds good.
Okay, so today we are going to be talking about the unsolved murder of Alicia Hummel. So this was suggested by one of our listeners, Grace N. So thank you so much for the suggestion. And we actually just passed the 7-year anniversary of Alicia's death, and her murder remains unsolved to this day. So I thought this was perfect timing for this case. And before we get into this case, I just want to say it's going to be a little bit of a shorter one. And I know everybody wants longer cases, and we are working on that. We have an extremely busy summer with me getting married, Andrea traveling a lot for my wedding and her sister's wedding, and also having babies.
Yeah.
But we are working on, you know, getting to longer episodes. But I also think that it's important to share some of these cases that are shorter and there's not as much information out there because they're just as important. So
absolutely.
I just wanted to mention that. But we are working on longer episodes. Mm-hmm. Alicia Marie Folkers was born on June 27th, 1985, to Laura Gilliam and James Waned. Waned? Yeah, Waned. Sorry, I think I typed that wrong.
Okay.
So she lived in Sioux City, Iowa, growing up with her sister, Erica, and they were mainly raised by their grandparents, Jan and Dwayne Folkers. So I'm not exactly sure where their parents were, but they were pretty much raised by their grandparents. As a kid, Alicia enjoyed dancing. She was extremely friendly and loved spending time with her friends, both in band, in school, and outside of school. In 2003, during her junior year of high school, Alicia met a man, or a boy, I guess, named Tony Hummel, and they began dating. They attended homecomings and proms together, and they stayed together through the end of high school and as they went to college. And that kind of hit close to home for me because I met my now fiance in junior year of high school, and we went to like homecoming and prom together. So when I read that, I was like, oh, just like me.
So cute. Yeah.
After graduating high school in 2004, Alicia went on to study human professions and clinical sciences / human development, and then changed to study family studies and psychology. So she was at South Dakota State University, and she actually first started in college studying nursing, but after her first 2 years, she decided that wasn't the path for her. So she changed majors to more psychology focused, and she actually decided to join the military to help pay for college. So in the second semester of her junior year, Alicia left for basic training, but unfortunately not long after, she was medically discharged due to a knee injury that she had received. Through college, though, she was still dating Tony, and she also made great friends in her sorority at SDSU. After she graduated from SDSU in 2009, she went on to continue studying communication disorders at the University of South Dakota, graduating with another Bachelor of Science degree in 2012. According to her friends, Alicia was considering getting a master's degree after that, but she really loved working with kids, so she decided to just start working. In 2013, Alicia started working as the head of the early Head Start classes for infants and toddlers at the Siouxland Family Center in Dakota City. So she was basically working as like a teacher organizer for this Head Start early classes for infants and toddlers. And according to her friends, family, and coworkers, Alicia just loved working with children and their families. On July 30th, 2011, while still in college, Alicia married her high school sweetheart, Tony, in Sioux City. After college, Tony worked for his dad in the house moving business, and he also worked for Zort's Fireworks during fireworks season. However, according to her longtime friend, Bethany Svakina, the marriage did not last.
Aww.
The two ended up separating in 2014, and according to Alicia's family, Tony kind of started becoming more and more distant from Alicia, and then Alicia eventually learned that he had been having an affair with another woman, and so she was heartbroken. She decided to move out of the house they were living in together and move back in with their grandparents. And she really struggled with the separation, trying to remain close to him. She started rollerblading to try to get closer to him, but it just wasn't working. So by early 2015, she was trying to move on. She was beginning to find herself again and kind of define who she was without Tony. In the spring of 2015, Alicia Hummel was 29 years old, and she had just finished the school year teaching at that, you know, preschool program. She was preparing for a month off, and according to her grandmother, Jan, who she was living with at the time, Alicia, quote, knew the divorce was coming closer and wanted some time away for herself to think. The week before her murder, she had actually planned to meet with Tony the next week to file for divorce and, like, basically officially move on with their lives separately. On May 31st, 2015, Alicia posted on Facebook that she was wanting to go fishing. She then asked a few friends to join her, but nobody was able to, so she decided that the next day she was going to go on her own. On the morning of June 1st, she posted on Facebook that she was starting her summer vacation off by going fishing. On her way out of the house that morning, she asked her grandfather, Dwayne, if he could help her that night to clean any fish that she caught during the day, during her fishing trip. So she was like, hey, when I get back, can you help me? And he was like, yeah, absolutely. Alicia actually had a pretty prominent online social media presence during this time, so we have a pretty detailed timeline of her activities on June 1st. A photo she posted on her Snapchat story was a picture of her fishing pole sticking out of the sunroof, captioned, "When your pole doesn't fit in your car." So that was as she was leaving that afternoon. At 12:50 p.m., she sent a message that she couldn't find her tackle box, so she was going to basically like start over and get a new one. At 1:06 p.m., she was seen at a Walmart in Vermilion, South Dakota, where she was buying a fishing license. And then at 1:19 p.m., she sent a message to a friend about the old man who had issued her the license, saying that he had hoped she caught a big one. Mm-hmm. And then at 1:30 p.m., she posted another Snapchat story of the dock that she arrived at Myron Grove Boat Ramp, which was about 7 miles west of Vermilion, where she had been getting the fishing license. And this one was captioned, "Finally, I've been waiting since fall." We also know that after arriving at the dock, she saw two people having sex in a car nearby. What? Because she sent a text to a friend at 1:45 p.m. saying, quote, "Apparently it's a nice day to get it on in the car midday too, LMAO," end quote.
Wow. Okay.
Alicia then began fishing in the Missouri River. Less than 2 hours later, and it's either at around 2:30 or 3 o'clock, depending on the source, but it was not that long after this last text that she sent to her friend at 1:45 p.m., a Games Fish and Parks officer who was working cleaning up the as a state boat ramp attendant discovered a body near the shore at the boat dock. The person he found in the river appeared to have died recently and appeared to have drowned, and he immediately called the police, and the body was brought in for an autopsy. When Alicia did not return home that evening, her grandparents and friends reported her missing, and unfortunately, by 10:30 p.m. that night, the body found in the river was positively identified as Alicia Hummel, and her family were notified.
No.
When Alicia was found, her keys were found in the front seat of her car, which had the windows down. Her fishing pole and phone, though, were both missing, and neither have ever been recovered. Her purse was also missing at the time, and we'll find out that later it was recovered, but at the time, her purse was gone, too. After finding Alicia's body, investigators began searching through the tall grass in a half-mile radius surrounding the dock, trying to look for any evidence that could lead to the killer, but they found nothing. Alicia Hummel's manner of death was ruled as a homicide pretty quickly, and her cause of death was drowning, with contributing circumstances of blunt force trauma to the head and incision wounds to the neck. So the injuries on her head and neck are what led to her death being ruled as a homicide, but her actual cause of death was drowning.
Okay, and what are incision wounds?
I think that it's like cuts, cuts on her neck. I don't think it was like a total like slash mark, like somebody had slashed her throat, but there were cuts on her neck either from a knife or like fingernails or hands or something.
Okay. That's what I was wondering. I just was like wanting a little elaboration because I was trying to visualize what that looked like.
Yeah. And I don't think it was like a full on like slash across.
Okay. Okay.
In the toxicology report, there was also no trace of alcohol or any other controlled substances in her system. Of course, the first suspect was Alicia's husband, Tony. However, Clay County Sheriff Andy Howe said that he was quickly ruled out because he was in Pierre over 250 miles away from where Alicia was found that day, and his alibi checked out. He was not involved.
Okay.
There are other people who were also ruled out, but there are people who have not been ruled out. But Sheriff Howe said, quote, "We do have suspects, but we don't have a case." And to this day, there are no named suspects in her murder. The only real clue that investigators have is a sedan that was seen in the area around the time Alicia went missing. So it was a dark-colored sedan with tinted windows and a loud exhaust, but that's pretty much all they know. They asked the public for help identifying that van, but it never led anywhere. They do not believe that Alicia's murder was a random act, but whoever killed her left very few clues. After the murder, security cameras were installed in the area in the hopes that the killer would return to the scene of the crime and they could catch him or her. And while over 2,000 pictures were collected from those cameras, they led nowhere. A year after Alicia's death, her purse was discovered on a sandbar in the river with cash and other items still intact inside. However, her cell phone was still missing and no other DNA or evidence was able to be collected from the purse. The police say that they do have information that they haven't released to the public, including knowing what the murder weapon is. So this isn't like 100% confirmed, but in interviews, the police chief basically said, or the sheriff basically said, "I can't answer that," which means like they probably know or at least have an idea of something. What the murder weapon was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Alicia's family believes that she put up a fight because of the state they saw her in at her funeral. So they saw that her fingernails were black, so they believed that police may have tried to and hopefully collected DNA evidence from under her fingernails, like if she had fought back. But Sheriff Howe has never confirmed or denied that. A poster with information about Alicia's murder still hangs in the booking area of the Clay County Jail to this day, and Sheriff Howe says he hopes that someday it triggers a memory of someone coming into the jail who may know something. There is also currently a $5,000 reward for any information that leads to an arrest and conviction in Alicia's murder, and anybody with any information can contact the Clay County, South Dakota Sheriff's Office at 605-677-7100, and I will have that information in the show notes. There is a Facebook page run by Alicia's family called Fighting for Alicia Hummel. And their hope is to bring awareness to her case and help keep it in the public eye so that it can one day be solved. and her friends and family are still committed to getting justice for Alicia. And it seems like the police are too. I'm going to play a couple of clips of what Sheriff Andy Howe said about Alicia's murder investigation this year around the 7-year anniversary.
We've had some new developments and leads in this past year that have generated quite a bit of interest and quite a bit of work for us. We've been actively following up on that information. Not a lot I can say about that at this point. We still want to have a successful prosecution when the time comes, but I do have a considerable optimism that we will be getting somewhere with this case. We're taking the leads. We have conducted many, many interviews. We've done some forensic analysis of evidence items, and we continue to do that. We're closely with the DCI agents assigned to this case, as well as the lab in Pierre. And it's just been an ongoing process of following through on those leads and with interviews and analysis.
Alicia was dearly loved by her friends and family. She is described by those who knew her as loving, wonderful, and incredibly loyal. Her friend Bethany said, quote, "She was the definition of a best friend. It's one of those relationships I probably will never find again. You called Alicia and she was there."
That's so heartbreaking.
I know. Alicia's younger sister Erica said, quote, "She was the best aunt, like the best aunt and ever to my firstborn." And another friend, Jody Hansen, who has known Alicia since kindergarten, said, quote, "She was one of the most amazing people." Bethany said she will never give up looking for Alicia's killer, saying, quote, "You have to fight for her because she can't tell her story." And that's true. And just because it's been 7 years and it doesn't seem like there's a lot of evidence doesn't mean that there will never be answers. I mean, we've seen cases solved with less evidence after a longer period of time, and I'm really hopeful that investigators have more DNA or information or something than what they're sharing with the public, because it really does seem like they have something. They're just waiting for a match or for a suspect to get arrested for something else or something like that, and they don't want to share it with the public so that they don't compromise the investigation.
Now, you may not know this because it may have not been in the research at all, but did they question the woman that allegedly was having an affair with her husband?
As far as I could find, they did not, but there's not a lot of information out there about like who they questioned.
Yeah.
The only person that they talked about being a suspect was Tony, and that he was ruled out really quickly. I also am not sure if that affair had, like, continued. She had discovered it in 2014, so it had been a while. So we don't know if, like, they were still together or anything like that.
Because, like, I agree. I think it was someone that probably knew her. Just the fact that, you know, they didn't rob her. You know, all her money was there. It was just an attack. And it wasn't, I mean, not that we know, but, like, if a serial killer did it or something like that, there would be, like, you know, an MO or...
Right, more connection.
Yeah, and it just seems like it was, you know, kind of a crime of passion almost.
Yeah, it seems like somebody, like,
knew
almost
she was gonna
went
be
up
fishing.
Behind her. Yeah, knew she was going to be fishing because they had some sort of... because they felt like followed her on social media. I mean, she was posting on social media and stuff. Went up behind her, hit her with something. She tried to fight back, which is probably what led to the cuts on her neck. Mm-hmm. And then they ended up either knocking her out and then she drowned, or they, like, physically drowned her.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I definitely don't think it was just a random attack. And I don't think that it was a random person. I think it was somebody who knew her in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
But... it really does feel like the police know more, because even the fact that they're like, the only thing they've really asked for help from the public for is identifying that black sedan or any information about that sedan. So it's not even like they've released even more, but it does seem like they have more. So I really do think that they have one or a couple of people that they think it might be, and they're just waiting for something to happen so that they can arrest that person.
Yeah.
But that is the unsolved murder of Alicia Hummel, and it is so heartbreaking. She sounds like she was just an incredible soul, and she deserves justice.
Absolutely.
And I want to leave you with this quote from the family's Facebook page, which I will also link in the show notes, and I highly recommend you guys go follow it, because if there are any updates or anything at all, they'll post that. But they said, quote, Alicia's story is much more than what happened to her, where she was killed, and how. She is more than a number or a South Dakota cold case. Alicia Hummel was a sister, a dog mom, a granddaughter, a daughter, an aunt, a niece, a friend, a wing woman, and a woman who had a zest for life. Mm-hmm. Alicia Hummel is and was a gentle soul, someone who was there for you whenever you needed. She was a partner, she wouldn't hurt anyone, and she saw the best in everyone. She loved and she loved with all she had. It is the purpose of this page to share Alicia and her story. It is our intention to help find the answers to why someone like Alicia deserved to die the way she did, as well as help bring justice to her name. If there is anything we ask you to fight for our angel. She cannot share her story anymore, but we can. End quote. So yeah, I wanted to leave you with that because kind of like what I said in the beginning of the episode, that these stories are just as important. It's like, okay, it's shorter and there's not, you know, a lot of information out there, so it might not be as satisfying to listen to, but it is so important because her family is fighting so hard and you just never know who might know something. I know we say this a million times and it's like, you know, we're just beating the same horse, but it really is, you just never know who might know something. And if by sharing her story, we can get her name out there to 100 people,
yeah,
you never know how that could spread. So we appreciate you guys listening as always, and please keep Alicia's family in your thoughts and go and follow that Facebook page because they're sharing on there, and the more traction they can get, the more people they can reach, and you never know who might know something.
Yeah. And we'll continue to share cases like this. I mean, all cases deserve to be told, you know, no matter how detailed they are, because sometimes it's just hard to find the articles and the reports and things like that, you know, but they still deserve to have justice. And they, especially these unsolved cases, like, I think that's definitely like a huge passion of both of ours, is to get out these lesser known cases. And people say that about us too, which sometimes that means shorter cases, smaller, you know, episodes, but we'll keep hitting that dead horse on the
and like sometimes like this case, there's just not a lot released in the investigation, but there's a little bit and you never know who might know something. So that is the case of Alicia Hummel. I will post photos of her. She was just so beautiful and she looks like such a sweet soul. So I'll post photos of her on our Instagram and Facebook. So go check that out. Yeah, thank you guys so, so much for listening. As always, until next time, keep it human.
Bye.